Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by a true pioneer in the medical cannabis field. It's Langdon Brown. Langdon is the owner of Dawn Medicinal Cannabis. Thanks for joining us today, Langdon.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. Greetings from Sydney, Australia.
Sydney, Australia. That's awesome. So, you know, there's a lot of history there in Australia, especially, you know, with cannabis. Can you give us a little bit? I know there was legalized in 2016. Can you help tell us a little bit of what it came into bring that legalization and what struggles have gone on since then and before then?
Certainly. Medicinal cannabis was indeed legalized in February 2016. I became involved in medicinal cannabis in 2012. I was a senior financial planner at Westpac, which was our first company and first bank in Australia. And I was working at the head office as a senior financial planner, very proud to be working there. But I had seen Weeds documentary by Dr. Sanjay Gupta and a practicing neurosurgeon from America who was saying that he was quite puzzled, but there was a lot of evidence pointing to non-psychoactive cannabis in its raw form helping to treat young kids with intractable epilepsy, Dravet syndrome. And at that time, I saw 2012, 2013, US is starting to take this seriously. Doctors are on board. There's scientific evidence, but in Australia, no one had heard of it. There was a lot of reefer madness propaganda. But when the doctors are on board in America, and they're obviously much smarter than myself, when they're on board, I saw it as a really good opportunity to help my country. I quit my job at Westpac at the bank and did a few months research to see if it was hocus pocus or not, this non-psychoactive medicine helping the kids with intractable epilepsy. And I soon found out, thanks to the internet, that it was real. And I saw it as a real opportunity for me to help my country. I've been senior financial planner, investment banker for more than 10 years. I think I was quite a self-centered person. And then I had the opportunity to work close for not-for-profit to help change the laws and bring compassion to sick and life-challenged people in my country.
That's incredible. You know, I see that a lot of times people who are willing to go out on a limb like this and have, you know, changed the complete course of their life, you know, completely. And like you said, you know, you did some research, but were you affected personally, or do you have somebody that's been affected personally that, you know, that motivated you to really spearhead this and it really affects so many people out there in Australia?
And my wife currently has just had a breast cancer operation and had cancer removed. And she's now using, instead of radiation and chemotherapy, she's using cannabis tincture, which is raw cannabis in hemp seed oil. And she is taking that along with Gumby. At the time I got involved with medicinal cannabis, there was no one directly to me who had cancer. My dad was a doctor. He was also an alcoholic. He regularly mixed sleeping tablets with alcohol and got away with it 99 times out of 100. But when I was 18, that claimed his life. This had a huge effect on me, where it stopped my drinking on the spot.
Uh-huh.
I grew up with in an abusive household, physical abuse. I was a street kid at 15, hospitalized twice under that age by stepfather. I had post-traumatic stress disorder, aggression like my father, compulsive habits for alcoholism like my grandfather, like my brother, like my dad, and anxiety, social anxiety. And ever since from about 16, when I was a street kid, I could find massive relief through cannabis. Despite it being illegal, it wouldn't matter if I was under a bridge, in a sleeping bag, if I could have a joint, I felt a whole lot better. And the next morning, I wake up and I could have a joint, and it didn't matter what was in front of me, I could handle it. And that's my close relationship with cannabis. Even when I was in Japan for 17 years, I smoked cannabis pretty much every day. It was extremely difficult to get. The risks are high, but I'm a much nicer person when I'm using cannabis.
Very good. You know, definitely, you know, very compelling story. You know, a lot of trauma, and I'm always, I don't know if fascinating is the right word, but you know, I'm always moved to hear when people have such tough upbringings, and you know, you see the statistics of how you had every reason to go the other way and to follow down those same path. And, you know, what do you think, you know, there's always the argument between nurture and nature. What do you think was within you, you know, to kind of go out and start helping people as opposed to following down that same path that you had seen take other people's lives and destroy people's lives?
I believe there was, without cannabis, I would have gone down that other route of alcoholism and hard drugs. However, this gave me just so much, took the edge off my personality. This gave me an opportunity to be involved in something that had helped me a lot, and now I've got the opportunity to potentially save people's lives when no one else was doing. Now it might sound like a remarkable story, but in our history in Australia, what was a big inspiration for me was an Australian legend story called Simpson and His Donkey, and he did much braver things than what I did. He was in the World War I Gallipoli campaign. And from the first day he landed on the beach, he found a donkey and from the front lines went out and collected wounded soldiers on the back of his donkey. Day after day, he would bring those wounded soldiers under enemy fire. He would bring those wounded soldiers back to medical facilities. And this was in 1915. He unfortunately died about 3.5 weeks into his work. But I thought this guy put his life on the line to help sick and dying Australians. I knew they weren't going to execute me. If I dot my I's and cross my T's, I pay tax, I show that I'm not making profit and I'm doing this altruistically, then I've got a real chance to help my country, like Simpson helped the country 104 years ago.
No, definitely. And, you know, maybe you look at it as, you know, not putting your life on the line, but you definitely put your freedom on the line. So you were talking about when you left the financial industry, then you followed this calling. Can you go over that a little bit of what that process was, you know, and how you kind of, you know, were helping so many people along the way?
So it was a big challenge to me, but it was And what I've been through in the last few years with court cases was severe, but it was nothing compared to my upbringing.
Uh-huh.
So I would not have survived what I went through the last few years because without that tough upbringing, because when the charges went down a few years ago, I wasn't allowed to live with my family. I wasn't allowed to see my children. I had my bank accounts frozen. I wasn't able to get a job for 3 years because I was on trial. Even though I had no criminal record, I wasn't allowed to apply for it. My hemp license was rejected. Forget innocent until proven guilty. So for the last 5 years, my life has essentially been on hold where I haven't been allowed to see my family. I had 5 or 6 court cases totaling a minimum 35 years jail. All the cases were dismissed. I provided the legal defense. I didn't represent myself in court, but I did quite a lot of study on cannabinoid medicine. But if it wasn't for those difficult early years in my life, I was living in my car for over 3 years. You know, I was quite badly hurt in police custody, requiring 18 months of rehabilitation. And I wasn't allowed to see my family during that time. So it was a dark time. But for me, in my mind, it was samurai training. I knew I'd been through harder times before. I was confident that I would win my cases. And what was most important to me was when a call came out that there was a kid in hospital where traditional medicines had failed. Somehow they had got my contact details, and it was my responsibility to get in my car. And like with Dan Haslam, who's a very famous Australian who died 2014, I drove 2,000 kilometres each way to give him medicine. I did that for many people. And it was a huge, huge pleasure when you walk into a hospital room and there's 10 or there's 20 people or 40 people, relatives, uncles, aunts, not just the kid who's sick, but they're waiting for you and they know that I've driven 500 or 1,000 kilometers to get this medicine to that child, and within a few minutes the child stops their seizures, and the kind of feeling you have is one where it's worth the risks. I know the police are compassionate people, and they are also trying to save people's lives, and they don't condone my activity, but they also know that I'm trying to help these sick and dying people.
I definitely, you know, and I've seen a lot, you know, people who have a past, you know, that they're able to break through with, you know, by giving, being a giver, you know, worrying about, you know, other people's well-being. And obviously we have to take care of ourselves as well, but, you know, having, can you talk about kind of that, you know, because it seems like you were like a cannabis Robin Hood, so to speak, you know, I mean, for lack of a better analogy. And then can you talk to us about kind of the legal stuff? When did that start coming to a head? You know, when you're arrested and I guess and kind of the proceedings?
Certainly. My first case was 2015. It was a commercial supply of prohibited substance, minimum 15 years jail, which was reported in Vice. And the case, each court case in Australia, there's usually takes about 2 or 3 years for the court case to go through the courts. It was dismissed on the first day of court. It was dismissed on two technicalities where I could show that there was no chance of the testing method which was used, which would give fair and accurate testing. For example, when they confiscated the medicine from me, they didn't actually test it until 9 months later, which decarboxylation occurs, which is changing from like THCA with the acid form to THC. So to do accurate cannabis testing, they should be doing testing within a couple of weeks of confiscation. They did it 9 months later, so there was no chance of an accurate test there. Plus, the authorities decided to use gas chromatography for the testing, which involves heating the substance up to over 300 degrees Celsius, which means that even if it was raw cannabis, it would give a positive THC reading. So it was dismissed on the date of trial. I had actually just joined up on the New South Wales Terminal Illness Cannabis Scheme, where I was allowed to help three people out of the 1,000-odd people that I was helping. And I registered myself as a carer for the government scheme, and about 5 days later, my house was raided.
Wow.
And they took all the medicine. They took all the medicine for the three people.
For the three people. So after you'd been helping hundreds, if not thousands of people, now for three people is what they're getting you on?
They got me on medicine for three people. My permit was to be able to help these people for 1 year. And each person was to have one small 25 ml bottle of cannabis, non-THC cannabis tincture that my wife's taking now. Three people had cancer. And so each person would get a bottle for a year, 365 days. I needed about 1,100 bottles. Got them all made up, and like I mentioned, 5 days later, the police came and took it all. So I was under investigation for a year, but immediately they brought in other detectives from around Sydney to find out how and why my previous commercial supply charges were dismissed. Because people don't normally get away with that, they said. So I sat down with them and I explained to them the 2 points I just explained to you. And I told them how to do accurate and fair testing, because I had a couple of companies that were interested in me working with them. And I wanted to get this dismissed as quickly as possible. And the police made all the same mistakes as the first time, which cost me another 3 years, actually 2 years of my life waiting for them. And the second charge is there was police incompetency, but not malice. They did, for example, confiscate 7,500 cannabis seeds from me for 100 medical conditions.
So now you were still facing charges long after medicine was legalized, correct? Federally?
Yeah. I closed my tax-paying transparent medicinal cannabis company the day before the Victorian government in Australia said that they would be supplying the medicine. That was for me, my job was done. Once the government would start supplying the medicine, I know the government hates competition. it was time for me to bow out. So I actually, even though it was legalized in February 2016, it wasn't until about August 2016 that the government said that they would be supplying the medicine. And they'd be importing it from Canada. Problem was, it was about 40 times the price I was selling it.
Uh-huh.
And this really, like, a lot of people went towards the government system, but they either had to take a second job or a third job or possibly mortgage their house. And a lot of people came back to the source that helped them in the first place.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, obviously, you know, you were doing it not for profit, and the government's trying to make money off of it. So that's obvious.
I think the reason why it was so expensive was that the government paid top dollar for medicine from a Canadian company. Oh. I don't think that the government wanted to make profit. They just negotiated really badly. Okay. They could have supplied the medicine locally from like what New Zealand is doing, where they're looking at creating more of a cottage industry rather than large pharma operating it. It was so expensive for people to try and do the right thing that a lot of people actually came back towards me and were begging me to continue supplying the medicine. They also weren't getting the results from the imported medicine. I was using full plant medicinal cannabis grown organically by many, many growers throughout Australia. And these results were totally different to the mediocre results that the my customers were getting from almost like synthetic lab grown cannabis.
So now we're 2019. You know, are you clear of all charges, or is that something that's still unsure? Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
I don't have a criminal record. I've got a clearance to work in the medicinal cannabis industry. And yeah, all charges were dismissed last November. I've been working with a lawyer to get a hemp license application, industrial hemp license application. My work's not finished here.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to begin I hope to begin a small 5-acre industrial hemp pilot. I've got lots of history in the banking industry. If I can do what I think I can do on a small scale, then I'll expand it. And I want to do something major for helping this carbon problem, this climate CO2 problem. And hemp and bamboo are great sequesters of carbon. And this is really where my interest lies now. I don't have the money to get into medicinal cannabis. I'd love to run a medicinal cannabis company. The Australian government makes no apologies for their restrictive practices, right? Because they've got no shame. Right? They've got no shame saying that, look, the entry for this is for people who have about $5 million in capital, right? They've openly declared war on all the pioneers of cannabis, that anyone who's been involved in the black market, they call it black market, medicinal cannabis market, any pioneers, right, will be blackmailed from this industry. And, you know, if they would prefer people to be on unemployment benefits doing this stuff illegally, it's a crime, right? It's a crime to put, I've got mates who are in jail for growing this plant, right, who helped me save people's lives. And they're in jail, ripped apart from their families, family smashed. Well, 20 kilometers away, a cashed up company can grow the crop in Casino, millions of dollars. They're talking about like 1.7 tons, and another one up the road is doing $160 million facilities. What about the people who actually made this thing happen? Uh-huh. Like these people who are on the news running these huge companies, I've never seen them in a hospital. I've never seen them at the Mardi Gras.
No, it's definitely devastating, you know, and that's what, you know, we fear over here a little bit federally, you know. It's, you know, even now people who are in that gray area, you know, that I guess we're operating in that quote black market, you know, a lot of them
helps people raises taxes, gets people employed. I haven't worked for.
And now to just let the whole industry open up to anybody who can open up their pocketbook is definitely, say that it's unfair is putting it lightly, that's for sure.
Too right. We've got an industry now where we've got politicians who are in medicinal cannabis companies, politicians who are against cannabis legalization. None of those politicians stood up for myself or any of the other pioneers who were taken through the court. None of the people running these cannabis companies have stood up for the pioneers going through the courts. It wasn't these companies that were, you know, trying to get the medicine to the sick people or trying to change the laws. That's why I did what I did. I wanted to change the laws. Right? How do I change the laws? One man? In my eyes, no. I create an army. That's why I've got like 800 people who have written fantastic customer experiences. My idea is to spread the knowledge, spread the word, get rid of the stigma. But having like restricted practices where only big pharmaceutical companies where say they're the only ones who are qualified to do this. No, the medicine's safe and effective. Right? We're a banana republic in Australia. We export coal, right? Uranium, ore, beef, right? Same things we were doing about 40 or 50 years ago. We have not progressed. We export rocks to China. Now we've got an opportunity to export high-quality medicine. Right. You can have a look at our economic figures are coming out today. Our country is in serious trouble. It's serious trouble economically. And we have an opportunity, if there's not so much red tape, where so many people could get involved in this industry, which we all know helps people, raises taxes, gets people employed. I haven't worked for 4 years. I'm university educated and I'm fluent in Japanese, but I wasn't able to get a job during this time.
Yeah.
Instead, they preferred me to be on unemployment benefits living in my car. It's bizarre. I'm not giving up, though. Right? If I give up, nothing changes. But if I'm successful with hemp farms sequestering their carbon, we go from 5 acres to 100 acres to 500,000 acres, then we can do something about this CO2 climate problem that 97% of scientists are on board supporting. It's up to us to do something about it.
100%. So, you know, you've been a leader this whole time, you know, and you said one man can't do it, but you were one man and you did do a lot. I would say, you know, what's the next step? What do you think, you know, you can do, that we can do as a community to bring more awareness, to bring more true reform? You know, in the world and in Australia and in the United States.
Well, my thinking is we have a wonderful opportunity, despite the challenges with social media. My Facebook account had 10,000 followers on it, but that was closed down. No warning or explanation, just closed down.
Yep.
However, LinkedIn is a platform that I'm using now. About 26,000 people follow me. I post sometimes 5 or 10 times a day. It's getting this information out.
Uh-huh.
LinkedIn is a fantastic platform. There's educated, resource people there. And it's getting this information to people. It's not... I don't use it as a platform to sell anything. I'm not selling anything. What I'm trying to do is get this knowledge to people that there's hemp is a very, very valuable crop. and the uses of it. We don't have to be polluting the environment. Everything we make from coal and from cutting down trees, and we can make from hemp. We can make electricity from hemp. We don't need to be tearing up our barrier reef with a dunny and coal and fracking water and ruining farmers' water. We don't need to be doing gas. We, in the US, if you covered 6% of your land in hemp, all your energy needs are met. It's getting this knowledge to the people with money, the people who can compare, put the information for them, compare cotton against hemp, compare the benefits of hemp plastic compared to using, which breaks down in 80 days, compared to biodegradable, non-toxic, compared to plastic sitting in our oceans for 30 years. Uh-huh. We need to do something about it. Right? And it's not about being difficult for me. Therefore, I used to be a scuba diving instructor, and I go to the Maldives before it disappears from global warming. And I go sit on the beach there, enjoy my scuba diving. No. Now's the time to do something about it. There are people who are committed and who are interested, and it's raising that awareness. And I've got massive support from these switched on, tuned in people on LinkedIn, and it's getting that word out that the medicine's been used for thousands of years, is safe and effective. Yes, governments told us fibs in the past, but we can get over it. The idea is addressing it now and moving forward. We can't hold bitter feelings towards governments that were telling porcupines 80 or 90 years ago. Right? We've moved forward. We've got the information. We've got the internet. We've got the opportunity to do something positive to help the world.
Definitely amazing. So, you know, how can, you know, talking about bringing awareness, and, you know, it's incredible how Facebook can just, in one moment, no reason, just shut down her page. We see it happening. We see it happening all the time for no reason, like you said. So how can listeners connect with you? How can they find more about your movement and the things that you're doing? Where can we connect with you?
Please follow me on LinkedIn. This is a platform that I'm using now. They allow people involved in the cannabis and hemp industry to post information on LinkedIn, connect with people in the industry. I've met some fantastic people. Timing wasn't right for me to consider business with my court cases at that time, but now I'm starting to move the chess pieces and get some really skilled permacultural people, involve people in private banking industry. This is the floor where, my permaculture expert for my hemp farm, he's been doing this for 15 years. And hasn't been able to raise capital in 15 years, just walking around in circles and circles. What he needed was an investment banker who was interested in cannabis.
Uh-huh.
That's me. So it's at bringing that business world plus the farmers together to show that it is a financially viable option. The bankers can make money. Plus, they can go to bed at night knowing that they're helping the world.
100%, 100%. So what's next for Langdon on the business side? Can you give us your plans on that side as well?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I've come down from Nimbin, which is the cannabis culture capital of Australia, where we have the Mardi Gras every May. To protest the prohibition of the sacred herb. I come down to Sydney to see a lawyer. I am keen on getting an industrial hemp license. I believe I can, through that avenue, I can, we've just allowed for the extraction, also in New South Wales, of the hemp flower and leaf. This will give you an idea how bizarre it was, why no one made any money for 15 or 20 years in this industry. 98% of the value of the plant had to be incinerated. You grow the hemp tree, but you weren't allowed to touch the flowers or the leaf. You could only make oil from the hemp seed oil, and that was only recent, like last year, November last year, that was only recent, plus use the fiber. Yeah, so 98, 99% of the plant was being thrown away. So the laws have changed. Their common sense is slowly seeping through. I'm keen on getting an extraction license so that I can, we're not allowed to mention the word CBD oil here. We've got to call it hemp oil. Again, like, get over it, guys. and yeah, can't put CBD on the packaging. It doesn't matter. This will change. The idea is to get involved and not be a bystander. I'm interested in a manufacturing license. That's a problem too. I've got the connections for the registered kitchen, but the capital for a manufacturing license I'd be rejected on because I was working not for profit for the last 5 or 6 years. So my avenue in is an industrial hemp license, I think. And if I can make that profitable, expand the operation, and then hopefully get in the medicinal cannabis part two in a year or two down the track with my own funds.
Incredible, incredible. Well, now as we close, is there anything else you'd like to share that we haven't already covered?
Just, it's been a real pleasure doing this. This is something that I'm proud of. Rebellions and is all part of history in changing law. If you know you're doing something right, if you know you're helping people, then you will become a better person, I think. This has, like you correctly touched on, this has helped my trauma. This helps me be a nice dad to my kids. I've got two young girls and a very conservative Japanese wife. And I'm trying to break a cycle of abusive parentship to my kids. My kids would not understand that. I mean, if I get cranky, my kids look at me like it's a foreign thing. I can't behave like a fool. This is my helping of my trauma so that I can be a good dad and try and break this destructive cycle that's been in my family for generations.
Wow, amazing. I mean, that is the most powerful thing. You know, we need more people like you who are on the front lines helping bring about law reform, but we need a lot more people also in their homes, in the privacy of their own homes, who want to take the steps, who are willing to take the steps to break those cycles, because they're insidious, definitely. So very inspiring. Thank you so much, Langdon. Really appreciate your time, and I know everybody else did too. So thank you for jumping on the call with us, and good luck to you. Happy to hear that clear and free now, and looking forward to seeing more good things from you in 2019 and beyond.
Thank you so much, Maynard, for the opportunity to tell my story and share it with my American brothers and sisters. And thanks so much, the US, for leading this way and helping educate the rest of the world. And fingers crossed that this progress with legalization will continue, because it's great for our economies, it's great for to empty our hospitals, and it's great for the people that the politicians have sworn a commitment and service to protect and help.
Thank you so much, Langdon. I'm looking forward to hearing many good things from you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's C-A-L-A-C-A-N-N.com. And follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.